Okay, so last week we had started discussing, or mostly discussed, the issues that come up with epidemics, but there had been a request to come back and focus on the issues, specifically on coercing inoculation, but instead of doing sort of a, so really to do that full topic, we would have to do the broader question of informed consent and paternal versus paternalism in halacha and the right in general to impose medical procedures. And we're not going to go through everything. So I decided instead of going through everything, I gave you two. I printed out two tshuvot. One by the Tzitz Eliezer, who thinks that you can coerce pretty much anything up to and including eye exams, which is the tshuva that I printed out, and a specific tshuva by Rav Asher Weiss on vaccines. I was nice, and for the tshuva by Rav Asher Weiss, I printed it out in English, because Eli Fisher made an official translation of it, so, or unofficial, but whatever. No, official. I think he ran it by official, reviewed and approved by Rav Asher Weiss. But before I look at that, let's spend a few minutes talking at the broader issues of coercion. I'll talk about it outside, and then we'll look at these two test cases. Okay. If I asked you, what does it hang on? Right, the question of whether you can coerce somebody to be treated medically, what would you say that even depends on? Yeah.
How invasive it is to them.
Okay. Well, you know, actually, before we do that, let's divide the question, right? Two broad cases that I think we have to talk about, and they're not the same. One is, can you coerce someone to undergo a medical procedure for their own good that has no impact on somebody else at all?
Oh, okay.
Right, that's one question.
So then,
right?
The better answer to that,
right.
Question.
And then what?
What I said, the better answer to that. Question.
Right, that question is very, right, that's very relevant, obviously, to this, right? Which if you say the answer might be yes to that, so the question might be yes, but it depends on the type of a procedure. The second question, and this is really what's going to be more relevant for vaccines, is even if you establish that you cannot force someone to do something in their own best interests, once their health has an impact on other people's health, then can you coerce them, pressure them, whatever it's going to be, to treat them. So we'll focus mostly on the second one, but let's talk about some of the issues, again, a little bit outside as to what this depends on. So let's start with question one. In medical terms, as I said, this is more the dispute of to what extent medical procedures should be paternalistic and to what extent they should, right? They should not. You should value autonomy. Traditionally, medical, like 50 years ago, 70 years ago, the theory of doctors was, we are here to help our patients. We don't necessarily have to tell the patients what we're doing. We are paternalist, right? We know what's best. We will take care of them. You couldn't necessarily strap them down and give them a medical procedure against their will, but you didn't. There was no value per se in explaining to them the situation, what the different options were. The doctor chose, the doctor gave it, and that was the theory of best medicine. And at this point, the medical establishment has gone all the way in the other direction, favoring patient autonomy, and that's why you need informed consent for everything, right? Not just consent, which is, yes, I agree that the doctor can do whatever he thinks or she thinks is best, but informed consent, right? The doctor has to theoretically make sure that the patient understands the different options, the consequences, the dangers of the disease, the dangers of the procedure, and then they need to consent to it, even if the doctor thinks that's not the best way of treating the disease. That's not the best way to proceed. So there are the philosophical questions here, right? Which is the role of a doctor to heal the patient, or is the role of the doctor to provide treatment for the patient in the way that he or she sees fit, right? Those are different models. From a halakhic perspective, what types of questions should this depend on? Right? Like what? Why would you, let's say, be able to coerce someone to? Yeah. Right, meaning, but why could you force someone to save themselves, right? Before we get to... Right, pikuach nefesh, or you'd have to reformulate it and say that we have a category in halakha called kofin ala mitzvot, right, that we can actually coerce one to perform mitzvot. And therefore, if saving one's own life is a mitzvah, then we perhaps can, if it's life-saving, coerce the person to save their own life. If we wanted to say that you could coerce someone to undergo a medical procedure that wasn't life-saving, then you would have to, at the very least, establish that there is a mitzvah of general health. Right, so in order to do this, first you'd have to establish the mitzvah we're talking about, and then you'd have to invoke coercion. In a lot of the modern research on halachic medical ethics, they have a very interesting claim, which I really don't buy, but it's in the Encyclopedia of Medical Ethics, this one, the Encyclopedia of Jewish Medical Ethics, where he'll tell you that what it depends on is the question of whether in halacha we believe that human beings own their own bodies. Right? And he'll tell you that paternalism assumes that people don't own their own bodies, and therefore the responsibility of any person is simply to make sure that their body is healthy because it belongs to God, and God wants you to keep it healthy, and therefore whatever the doctor thinks is right, you do. And the informed consent, patient consent, world assumes that people do own their own bodies, and then Dr. Steinberg claims that, well, halacha doesn't believe that, and therefore we don't believe in fundamentally in informed consent. Yeah?
Why does a paternalistic society have to place value on ownership? I feel like it would
be... Yeah, I said, I'm not convinced by this.
You have to define it that way.
Correct, I'm not convinced by this, because you could get to this result, you could get to either result in either direction. Right, you could get to the result that you can coerce it, not because you don't own your body, but simply because you have responsibility to keep yourself.
Somebody else has authority over you, and that's like.
Or whatever, and you could say, as some have claimed, that no, even if you think that God owns your body and you are the steward, you are the guardian of your body for God, so to speak. You could say, okay, but we don't believe in. We don't believe that you have the right to do whatever you want either because, right, you could say you don't have the right to do whatever you do, or you could say no, the doctor isn't the primary steward on my body, I am, and therefore it's not in the doctor's right to make decisions for me, right, just like, right, you can't, if I entrust you with my property, so, right, I entrust you with my property and say invest it wisely. If you would just sign it off to somebody else, right, without vetting them, right, I wouldn't have a claim against the, whoever you gave it over to, right, I would have a claim against you, which is why don't you research the mutual fund that you put my money into before you put it there, because it's whoever is the guardian has primary stewardship. So some have argued, what do you mean? Even if you think you don't own your own body, you should still have informed consent because the doctor doesn't have the responsibility, so to speak, to God over your body. You do. And then others have raised practical issues, which is even if in theory you could coerce somebody to undergo a medical procedure who is life-saving, since there's multiple opinions about what the best course of treatment is going to be, that decision can never be made by a particular doctor. That always has to be made by the patient. And the patient has the right and responsibility to weigh out different options from different doctors. This gets even more complicated in cases where the options are not save your life or die, but save your life and live a life of indignity or pain versus die. Right? Then it gets very, very. Then it gets even more complicated because under what circumstances are you actually allowed halachically to not extend your life? Right. So these things get very, very complicated, and there's a lot of discussion about every sub-issue here. If you have the source sheets from last week, just to look at two of the primary sources that are quoted on this issue before we go to the specifics of the Tzitz Eliezer's Tshuva on coercing in general, and then Rav Asher Weiss specifically on vaccines. In the halachic literature, you'll often find, this is number, what number is this? The Magen Avraham and Rav Yaakov Emden. Which did not print in mine? Did not print in mine? That's strange. Okay, they don't have the sources from last week.
Yeah.
You found the Magen Avraham. Number 29 and 30. So often people will quote as one of the proofs that we believe that you don't fundamentally have the right to deny yourself medical treatment, at least in life-saving ones. Right? Again, that's the easier one to see why there would be a mitzvah. The Magen Avraham says that Ra Echad Omer Tzarech Im Lo Ratza Chol Lekabel Atrufa Kofinoto. That if a doctor says he needs it and the sick person doesn't want to take the medicine, we force him. Chole omer tzarich ani l'trufa, ploni rofe omer ein tzarich, shomin l'chole. If the doctor says he doesn't need the medicine, but the patient says he does, we listen to the patient. This is even on Shabbos, meaning we'll violate Shabbos even if the patient says they need it, even if the doctor doesn't agree. V'marofe omer sh'oto trufa yazigu, shomin l'rofe. Unless the doctor says that won't be neutral, actually damage the person, so then we don't listen to the patient. So people point to this Magen Avraham as saying, you see that you are allowed to coerce somebody to undergo medical treatment. The problem is that it's not actually clear that that's what the Magen Avraham is saying, because the Magen Avraham is talking about a very specific case. If you look at the Tshuva of the Radbaz, he's talking about a case in which somebody doesn't want to accept treatment on Shabbos because he doesn't want to violate Shabbos to save his life. And it could be that only in that circumstance we can coerce somebody, right? Meaning, if someone fundamentally wants to be treated, but they don't believe that you can violate Shabbos, so we don't respect that, because that is, like, they really want to live, they just have a gross misunderstanding of how halacha works, so then we coerce it. But it's not clear from the Magen Avraham that if someone is fully aware and it's not making a halachic claim, right, that is faulty, or not acting on false halachic premises, that you'd be able to coerce them. But anyway, this is the Magen Avraham that's quoted. And Rav Yaakov Emden, commenting on that Magen Avraham in number 30 here, says that Magen Avraham quotes the Radbaz, Shem Rofe Omer Tzarich. It's unclear how much of this comes from the Radbaz, but that's a story for another time. Shem Rofe Omer Tzarich V'chole Imlo Ratza Chole Lekabel Trufa Kofenoto Nearly dafka kshotze limnoa meishtamesh brufa shua vadaid lachmel zom ichshas yisurei de Shabbat. Right, that's what Rav Yaakov Emden says. He said this is not a universal rule. This is only if someone says he's not going to take the medicine because it's Shabbat. Avalam nimna mevnei she'eino machzika l'rufua beduka. But if it's because he doesn't trust the medicine, afil midat atzmo bilvad, even if it's completely irrational, I mean, he has no good reason to not trust the medicine, but he just doesn't. So we listen to him, Koshkin Mesai Rofe Echad, and for sure, if a doctor, if it's a dispute amongst doctors, then we listen to the patient, etc. So what you see is that Rav Yaakov Emden clearly doesn't really believe in the ability of coercion. He thinks that this is a local case. The Shabbos, the Magen Avraham itself, it's not clear, though he's often quoted as saying that we can coerce procedures more generally, though it's not 100% clear that that is, in fact, what the Magen Avraham wants. Okay, but like I said, I don't want to, you know, that sort of 15-minute summary will have to suffice for now. But what I printed out for you, like I said, is two things. The Tzitz Eliezer, who basically takes the very extreme approach, which is there's a mitzvah not just of life-saving, but of general health. And then takes it to its logical conclusion, which is, if you buy all the assumptions we've talked about, why you might be able to coerce and not need informed consent, takes all of that, plus a very, very ambitious understanding of what types of medical procedures there is a mitzvah to undergo to maintain your general health, and ends up with this tshuva in which he coerces people to take eye exams. So we'll look at that. And then, like I said, the second tshuva here is vaccines, where we move from the question of just yourself to what happens when your health affects other people, and that obviously changes the equation, because even if you think, you don't buy these arguments and you don't think that you can coerce medical procedures when it just affects you, maybe you will think that it changes when your health affects other people, similar to the way we talked about with quarantine last week, which of course is very real. When you go through the airport, the signs are like ridiculous now, right? Because anyone who's coming back from China, Thailand, I got a text last night from them. Do you guys get texts from the Misrad HaBriyut?
No.
I'll read it to you.
Actually,
so last night I got a text from the Misrad HaBriyut, which made it very real. I don't know if it's because I went through, like because I flew and they know I flew.
How would the Misrad HaBriyut knew that you flew?
I have no idea.
Can you just check with any other person and ask if they got it?
Oh, that's true. Aura got it also. So no, it's just everybody.
I didn't get the text, but that helped.
What?
I did not get the text.
Right, but my wife did get the text, so...
I have two SIM cards.
Here, I'll read the. I got an English and a Hebrew. Okay. Important announcement from the Ministry of Health. If you have visited China in the last 14 days, you must be in home isolation according to law for the period of 14 days since departure from China. If you have been to China or, and then they footnote, if you've been to China or one of the following locations, South Korea, Hong Kong, Macau, is that how you pronounce it?
Macau.
Yeah, Macau, or Taiwan, and you have a fever, cough, or other difficulty breathing, please immediately inform the MDA emergency services, stand in the transit hall. Maybe it was from the airport. It's assuming I'm in the airport, so maybe it is. For additional information, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right, meaning, so they are quite clear about this. Okay, yeah, there's a question, and then I'll just hand these out.
Let's say like, you follow the message that we're about to read about.
Yeah,
now, like,
the eye exam,
first,
yeah.
What do you do, if in a separate, as a Jewish doctor, let's say in a hospital where they have, the rules that you're not allowed to force patients to take a treatment?
Good, so that gets complicated as to whether, if, not enough print on here? Just enough. This is what, yes, sir? So that gets a little bit complicated, right? Because you could say that in theory I can force, but in order for me to be able to keep my job and continue helping people, then I can't. And then I have to give them the option, right? And the Tzitzit Eliezer specifically has many tshuvot on that, where in such a case, you're not obligated to give up your livelihood in order to maintain that. Whether he would say the same thing if, right now the person's life was in danger, was refusing treatment, right? When it's pikuach nevesh, would he say that pikuach nevesh is different? Maybe. Okay, so that's the tshuva by the Tzitzit Eliezer. So let's say take a few minutes on the tshuva of the Tzitzit Eliezer, and then, like I said, this will be pretty... Rav Asher Weiss's tshuva is a bit long. We're not going to read all of it, but instead of giving you the original, I gave you the approved translation by Rav Asher. It's the benefit of having a posek who's originally American, so he could approve it, and that means that I know he'd be happy with this as well, so he's approved this... Do you guys know Eli Fisher, actually? He lives here in Buchman. He's a translator by profession. But anyway, so he published this translation of the Tshuva by Rav Asher Weiss, so we'll move from there to vaccine. But I want you to first to see how an extreme position that favors, in general, coercive measures, what that looks like. So let's take 10 minutes to try to at least read some of that Tshuva. We'll go through it, and then we'll move to the specific vaccination. Tshuva, I'm not going to pretend this is the only view on the topic, but I want to at least see one perspective on how this plays out. So let's first look at the Tzitzit Eliezer. So this is actually the second tshuva in a row in the Tzitzit Eliezer that is relevant, but this is the more intense one. And again, I won't read through all of it, but I want you just to see how, if you buy basically every assumption that there's a mitzvah of maintaining general health, and you can coerce people to mekayim a mitzvah, and therefore we essentially come up with a paternalistic system, what that might look like. So here is the question. Im yesh lechayev hore yeladim u'menahal lehem hachinuchiyim lehafnot yeladim lepikuach v'tipul einayim kedei limnoa hitpatchut kotzer re'iya. Can you obligate parents and principals, administrators, to make sure that the kids, that the children under their care, or their children, get eye exams to prevent diminishment of sight. V'chiyuv sheish bazel amostod etziburim emeshaldim la'ktavad etaktivim kasmim l'matera zot. And additionally, a monetary obligation on the government to provide funds for this. So if you skip down to the third paragraph where it says questions, it's Shelat Tohi. The question is, Heyot Vavatoim Tzibur B'nei Yeshivot Bo'ir HaKodesh, etc. Zar Basei Shana Hitrashem Shekishmonim V'sheish Achuz Miklal B'nei Yeshivot Sovlot Mikotzer Re'iya. He said in his experience, 86% of yeshiva guys have eye problems. That may be true. I don't really know.
Where's he getting the number?
What? This is a doctor. He's saying that was his statistical experience.
Eye problems are extremely common, not to use. Yeah. And then on top of that, they're always like poor.
Yeah, I know. I honestly was convinced that after years of yeshiva, I would need glasses. You know. In fact, after I left yeshiva for a little bit, I had got very, very weak glasses, and then my eyes returned to normal. So on my driver's license, when I renewed it, whatever it was, however many years ago, my American says I need very, very weak glasses. But by the time I got my Canadian and Israeli licenses, and they took the eye exam again, they said I don't need it. So I haven't worn glasses in ever. Which is a miracle. It's a miracle. What?
My eye doctor was your vision's going to go back to normal after a while. It just got worse.
Yeah, so that's actually what happened. So it is a miracle that I've been reading source sheets in the font that I make them for this many years and still, thank God, have my sight. What?
It's like a solid 12.5.
This is 11. This is 11 with zero margins, but
not kidding.
But anyways, so he says, "Kamochein rova yeladim shalem sovim mikotzer." He said their children have problems with seeing. Va'abaya ikarid he she'achuz mesuyam et aver ba'in achad b'shnei nayim misibuchim eikem amachala. Now said many of them even become blind in one or both eyes. V'yod ve'efshar limnoi hipatchut kotzer ria b'ofen kaze limnoi efsharut shel sibuchim be'inayim chal zivaron l'chei nafsho b'shelato. So now he wants to know, since they could prevent this by doing eye exams, so what do you do? So he says, im b'b'chinat al-achai yesh l'chayev b'nei yeshivot l'afnot yeladeihem l'pikuach v'tipuk limnoi hipatchut kotzer ria. Can you obligate people to send their children to eye exams? That's question one. Im chinat alacha yesh lachayevet mosdot elimura torah tiyim lafnoi kol tamidim levikuach lachachavet tibolag niskar. So question one is, can parents be forced? Should they be obligated, rather? We haven't gotten to forced yet. And two is, should the educational institutions force obligate their students to take these eye exams? And three is, im chinayel chatid yesh achayved mosdot etziburim memshaldim lasot v'lazorkedim lenoit batchut shomachala zo. Does the government have to step in and fund it? Right. Those are his three questions. Should schools be forced to send their students, and does the government have to fund it? Right. Those are the three questions. So he answers Aleph. Tanan mesechin nidarim. So he said, the Gemara in Nedarim tells you that if you make a vow that you won't benefit from somebody, so you are allowed to visit them when they're sick. Sorry, that you're not going to give benefit to somebody. So you can visit them when they're sick, but you're not allowed to sit down. Right, because visiting the sick is a mitzvah, and therefore that you're allowed to do, because that's not considered benefiting them, because you're obligated to do that. But if you sit down, right, you would, right, you'd be getting benefit, and you're allowed to save their life, right? You're allowed to save their life, marapo rufuat nefesh, avo lo rufuat mamon, right? But you can't, short of that. What is Rufuat Mamon? So the Gemara explains that means you can heal them, but you can't heal their animals, right? Their property, right? You can't be a veterinarian for someone who isn't allowed to get benefit from you, but you can save their life. And the Rambam explained, Mavara Rambam Firsham Ishnayot Sham, Delachain Einze Asur Lachole Atzmo, Lefi Shu Mitzvah, Ratzalomer chiyuv harofei minat Torah lerufuot chole Yisrael v'zenichlal mefirish mashikatov pasuk v'shivatolo lerapot et gufo. The Rambam says, why is it that I'm allowed to heal somebody who isn't allowed to benefit from me? And he answers, because it's a mitzvah for me to heal him. Hashavar aveda which means that when I see him in danger, then I'm obligated to save him if I know how to save him, whether it be his life, his money, using right my talents or my money or my wisdom. And therefore he says, and then he goes on to quote the different Gemarot that say that you have a mitzvah to save somebody's life because of Hashivotolo, right, of an expansion of Hashavat Eveda. And then in the second line he says, Umikra Nosaf, Shalot Tamorol Damreyecha, Yafin Shechiyuv, Shemuchuyav Afil Mitrach, Megor Agurik, Kedei Latzio. Right? This is Gemara we saw last week. Right? That you're obligated to save people's lives for two reasons. Lotamorol Damreyecha, Hashavat Eveda, and from the combination of the psukim, you learn that you even have to spend money in order to save somebody's life. So you see that there's a mitzvah. So the next paragraph, he says, "Vayta zot leva'er, digam sharambam bidvarav kotev lashon shiuk shroeoto shum mesukan. Mikol makom ena mechuvan dafka lemesukan mamash." So now he makes his first jump. He says, first of all, you know that you have to save somebody's life, but that's not only if his life is in danger. This obligation also obligates the doctor to help someone be healed from a disease that he wouldn't be able to recover from without professional help. Meaning, help that he or she requires a doctor, right, rather than someone says, look, you know, I have a cold, I'll let it pass, right? I'll fluids and I'll stay in bed, right? I don't need whatever you can give me that will, you know, maybe lessen the symptoms or...
Alleviate
the symptoms or something like that. Right, that you don't have to force someone. But if it's something that will not pass without medical help, so the doctor is obligated to administer that as well. And he proves this in the next paragraph from the fact that he says in one version of the Perush HaMishnayot, it says that the doctor is obligated if the patient is in danger. But he notes that if you look in the translation, so Perush HaMishnayot that you have in the back of the Gemara, right? The Perush HaMishnayot was written by the Rambam in what language?
Hebrew.
In Judeo-Arabic. And therefore, all the Perush HaMishnayot that we have are translations from the Judeo-Arabic, unless you read it in Judeo-Arabic. So he says, if you look at the Kafach translation, rather than the standard Ibn Tibbon one, which is in the back of the Gemara, he doesn't have the word of Misukan. He doesn't have this qualification that it needs to be that the person is in danger. And he quotes, Lo nesar zeh l'chole atzmo, menishu mitzvah, klomar shechayev rofei min adin, l'arapot chole Yisrael. Because the doctor has the obligation to heal those who are sick, and therefore, even if there's a prohibition of benefiting, it doesn't matter. So he says, you see, that he has a different word instead of misukan, and it's just, in Rav Oved, you just see that he's losing out or something like that, the doctor's obligated to heal him. So if you look then at the bottom of the page, in Bet, he says, Nilmar Eifo Medivei Rambam. What we learn from the Rambam at any rate is that the mitzvah of Shavat Eveda, Lotamon Odam Reyecha, means that a doctor has an obligation to heal a patient whatever way they know how. Im kein nilman mize bepshitut shechiyuv ugam afilu kshvehodo lachrir chaveru sheino mevin. And now he takes his next jump, which is, if I'm obligated to heal people, that means I'm also obligated to coerce people who don't understand why this is in their best interest. Now that's a huge jump,
yeah.
Right? Because you could have just said, look, let's take the example of Hashavat Aveda. What's the halacha if I lose an object? You have to return it. What happens if I lose the object? You come to return it, and I say, yeah, keep it. What's the halacha?
You can keep it.
And yet, the Tzitzel Yazir is now saying, but even if it's a case where the person is essentially saying, keep your help, right? Keep your help, don't help me, he says it's not true. Right here, your obligation to help is even when the person doesn't want help. And this is where I said that you get people who will argue the reason is because you don't really have the right to turn down help because you don't own your body or something like that. Yeah?
Is it commonly accepted to liken Hashavat Aveda to your help?
Yeah, because it's the Gemara we saw last week.
Okay.
Right? That Hashavat Lo includes saving someone's life. And therefore, but the Tzitzel Yazir makes this jump and says that it's not just that I have to save someone who wants to be saved, it's that I have to save someone even if he doesn't understand, or even if he doesn't care. Now this is not obvious, right? That jump is pretty extreme. And once he says that, he says in Gimel, Uminan Yilmar Efo, Gamlan Yon Didan Bekeshelo Dimvavate, Hatalmud Torah, Shaurim, the Gamlar Abodam Lam Divanam Alim, Deyoche, Cholet Biadam Lachech, Yodem, the Kapel, Hatipul Vadurj Benehem, Shmuchevim Mekach, Mikoch, Hase Shavatelo. He said, once you have that obligation, so every parent and every school has the ability to coerce their children or their students to get eye exams. Right, the parents can just say, we're going to the doctor. That's all there is to it. And the schools can say, you know, you can't be accepted unless you check off all the boxes in your health form. You know, right? Like, that we do that all the time. We don't usually put eye exams in there. But as Tzitzel Yazir said, that's a problem, right? We should start doing that. Yeah.
But, like, with all the parents coercing their children, like, what age are these kids? Like, you're not going to...
Under 18,
presumably. But for a 6-year-old, you're not going to be, like...
Of course not. Of course not. Right, I mean, that's sort of obvious. I mean, it should be obvious. It's not necessarily obvious, but you're right. And he says, but then the Rambam says, and he says, that you also have an obligation, the schools should be teaching their kids that you have an obligation to maintain general health. And if you look at the top of the second page, he quotes the Rambam Hilchot Deot. The Rambam Hilchot Deot says, he doesn't quote a pasuk, he just has a logical argument, and he says, Ho'il v'heyot aguf bari v'shalem midarkei Hashem hu, shari efshar shi'avino yida davar midiyad aborei v'chole. If you're sick, you can't understand God. You can't be, right? If you're really, really sick, you just don't have the physical energy and ability to concentrate on eternal truths. Whenever you're obligated to avoid things that harm you and be engaged in things that are healthy. And therefore you should explain to your students how important maintaining the health of their eyes is l'kabel tibo darush kedei lamno ibud ha'riya b'harbe o b'ma'at. And then he says, this is for sure true in a case where the eye problems you're talking about might lead to blindness, right? That's even more true. And then he goes even farther and he says that this might be counted as pikuach nefesh. He says, when you're talking about pikuach nefesh, there is no doubt. Shemechayvim la'asot afil neged ritzono hamuchlat shel chole. Right now, he seems to be a little bit hesitant here, right? He says, by the eye exams, he says you can coerce, but he sounds like some sort of soft coercion. Right? Not like tying the person down and making them have an eye exam, but teach them about it, make that the policy in your school, something like that. In paragraph Dalit, he says, but if there's actually pikuach nefesh, I have no hesitation to say that you're absolutely obligated to go against his will, no matter how explicit it is. And then he quotes the Morgzia, which I'm not sure that's what he means. And then in Hey, he says, V'chiyuv zeh yeshno gam b'kol heicha, she'shichim la'atzil cholem machlato, misukenet, olo misukenet. This is true every time you have to cure someone from their disease, whether they're in danger or not. V'yeshno b'davar zeh gam b'shum kiyum mitzvah v'avta l'recha kamocha. And you also fulfill v'avta l'recha kamocha. And in Vav, he says, "V'ad k'dekachay pashut l'davar la'poskim zal she'yeshno chiyuv kaze al kolos ovivim enachole ad she'danim be'echa she'otzio tzaod avur kach mili l'shol dechole mimcha v'chol achkach la'zir lahem otzaod." It was so obvious to the poskim that you're obvious to do that, that you are obligated to do this, that they deal with questions of what happens if I spent money to have a patient go through the medical procedure without telling them, can I demand the money back or not? Because it was my obligation, and therefore in Zion he says, well, once it's your obligation, so it must be that the government has to pay for it, which is yet another jump here. So again, like I said, I wanted to give you this tshuva because it's an example of someone who basically takes every assumption that we talked about that you would need and takes it to its logical extreme. You have an obligation to maintain general health. The doctor has an obligation to intervene on that because it's his obligation to make sure you're healthy. This is true even against your will. This can be true even definitely with soft coercion and real coercion. Definitely when it's bigoach nefesh.
It's not realistic. Like, that's these are all ideals.
And then he says, and the government has to pay for it, right? Meaning, again, is it real? Is this possible? I don't know.
It's interesting that you unlikely. Say the government has to pay for it, because that's just inserting political.
Well, this is in Israel. We're talking where there is a socialized. There's been socialized medicine here since the beginning. This is not. This is one of those things you have to. Right. And you just have to remember that, right? Outside of America, this either was never a political issue or has not been a live political issue in a very long time. That's a statement of reality. This is not a statement of which side of the politics you are in America. But like, if you go to Canada, England, Israel, anywhere in Europe.
I have socialized medicine in the U.S. because my dad's
there you go. Right? So you have, so just not a live question, right? Meaning,
yeah, I wasn't.
Right, like in Israel, it's taken as a given. The government pays for it, and then you have disputes about what should the government be funding and what shouldn't be funding, but the fact that the government is paying the bills is just the reality. That's not, that's not a live political question. But anyway, this is an example of a posting who takes basically every assumption. But you see the flaws, right? You could just say, look, maybe it's true of Pikuach Nevish, but not for general health. Maybe it's true only in a case where the patient is refusing it on halachic grounds. Right? Meaning, I don't want to be Machal Shabbos, but maybe this is not in general. Maybe in general they have the right to say I don't want the treatment. The Tzitz Eliezer doesn't even get into the question of what if I disagree with the medical procedure. He takes it as a given, like it never enters his mind that the doctor might be wrong. Right, you could have argued on reality here, which is in theory, you can coerce somebody to go through a procedure that will maintain their health, but in practice, you can't.
That it will.
Correct, but he doesn't even get into the possibility that right. And that was what Rabbi Yaakov Emden said, which is you clearly can't coerce someone if there's two opinions. Because the patient can always just say, I believe like the other doctor. He doesn't even get into that. And he's willing to say this even about eye exams where there's no obvious
benefit from the exam.
Yeah, there's no obvious disease at the moment, and it's really a quality of life thing, and clearly nobody else is suffering from it. Um But simply by noticing the gaps in this tshuva, you can see why poskim who wouldn't agree with this, and I my feeling is that poskim don't go this far. Very few people are going to go quite this far. You can see all the places in which a posek might and has argued. Right? You could argue on principle, or you could just say, look, you can save somebody's life, but you can't do that for regular health things. Or even you can, not for like low-level things like this. You could say, look, a doctor has the right, you have the right to insist that someone get medical treatment only if it's right completely agreed upon by the entire medical community. But if there's a real dispute, or even maybe a minority voice, patients have the right to weigh in. And he doesn't even get into the question of the quality of life. Now here, that's not really it, right? Your quality of life does not go down from an eye exam. But in this truth, he doesn't go...
Because if you get your pupils dilated, it's going to be like that for
a bit. Yeah, I mean, for a little bit, and it's painful and annoying. But he doesn't really get into it. Now, it happens to be that Tzitz Eliezer is a tshuva about whether a person has to undergo life-saving treatment if the only way for him to survive is to survive constantly attached to tubes. There the Tzitz Eliezer actually says, no, the person has the right to let himself die. So the Tzitz Eliezer also has some interesting exceptions to his own rules. And it's trying to put together the Tzitz Eliezer's position is actually quite hard. But my feeling is that poskim, at least on the non-pikuach nefesh cases, are often going to disagree for all the reasons that we talked about. But these things get complicated when you then move to vaccinations, where... So vaccinations get more complicated because, one, it affects other people. Right? And often the question you're asking is not just, can I force, but let's say I don't want to force you, but I also don't want to let your kids in my school, which is a soft form of coercion. Is that allowed? Does it change it that there is a loud, if statistically small, segment of the community who believes that vaccinations are counterproductive?
I don't understand how you can allow that opinion to exist. If it, like you said, that these people believe that, but on what basis do they believe
that? You're going to see that Rav Asher Weiss is going to take a very firm position on that. But I do want to point out methodologically that, right, methodologically speaking, it is actually a very strange assumption that a posek is allowed to make a determination of reality for, right, in a field that they're not an expert, right? Meaning, I agree with you.
The last two we read didn't involve Jesus. I mean, like...
Correct, but that's an assumption which...
He wasn't claiming that eye exams would benefit somebody's health. He was just saying that, like, in a case that, like, a doctor deems it to be...
Correct, but he doesn't get into the question. Let's say there actually was a medical procedure where it was 50-50. Right? Half the doctors said yes, half the doctors said no. So there, I think we'd all agree the patient has the right. We would encourage, most people I think would agree, give the patient the right, know the information, and choose.
Give
right,
the patient the right to flip a coin.
Or whatever, or even 70-30, right? Meaning, still, like, where there's a significant percentage where something is both are live options in the medical community.
Right.
And if a posek would come in and say, I agree with the 70% or I agree with the 30%, we would all be like, that's not really your place there. No, I understand. But at what point do we become convinced that it doesn't matter anymore? Right, I mean, at what point? Right, 90-10?
Case-by-case basis.
Right, so it could just be that there is no good answer, right? It's in a case when it is obviously, right, you know, where the outliers are really outliers. So then the posek has the right, methodologically, to assume that even though he's not a doctor and can't determine this directly, that he should just take the best information that he has. I tend to agree with that conclusion, right? I tend to agree with that conclusion, but you could see somebody saying, look, I'm not telling you, I agree you should do everything that's healthy, right? Meaning some of the people who don't want more anti-vaxxers will say, we agree we should do everything that's in the benefit of... Right, some people are ideologically opposed to it, right? That's like the Chilul Shabbos case, right? Like Christian scientists are the, right, people who won't take refuah on Shabbos, right, essentially. Right, we don't believe in medicine. But then there are a lot of people who say we do believe in medicine, we just don't believe in vaccines, or we think it causes autism or whatever. Even if you don't find that viable, you have to realize that methodologically speaking, for a posek to say, I don't buy your assessment of reality, and therefore I'm telling you this is the halacha,
yeah,
is still a methodological move he has to make, which may be that case by case you're allowed to do that. In fact, I agree with that. But I'm saying you could see why someone would say, I don't agree. Right? I do agree. Right? I want to make that on record, right? Right, on record. During this year, I will highlight the methodological assumptions that are being made.
Okay.
Right? My personal opinion is I fully, right, endorse vaccines and think you're chayav to take them and etc. Right? You know, that I do, right? Not that anyone cares about my opinion, but I understand that there's a methodological assumption there, which is that I am making an assessment based on my understanding of medicine that this is the right thing, and therefore applying halachic principles to it. Yeah. So presumably, right, that would be the case where you could say, right, if a posig said, well, that's not legitimate, they would say, right, you're opposing it for halachic reason, I'm telling you you're wrong.
Yeah.
Right, that's where you would say, yeah, like that, you don't have the right to say, you don't have the right to make up that, you know, halachic position. Now, it gets messy because if people have followed at all the Jewish news, and this is why he's writing the tshuva, there were rabbis who said, we don't believe the doctors, and believing the medical establishment is itself a lack of bitachon in Yerushalayim, so it starts to get into theological machlokot. Like I said, I decided that instead of, you know, giving sort of a survey of this topic, where because on some I want to give a survey, but to be honest, I don't really want to give those opinions their day in court. I just don't. I've read them, and you know, I will side with Rasha Weiss, but if you read them, it's crazy, right? I mean, part of it is, yes, I'm biased, right? I believe in science, but not just I believe in science. As I mentioned last week, like, I grew up in my mother is an epidemiologist. I am not someone who is about to say, oh yes, let's give everybody their equal day in court, including the people who say that the entire medical establishment is lying, right? We have this, I have I won't say who it is, but whatever. We've had this dispute at some point because we have, you know, some cousins. Everyone has a cousin who believes the medical establishment is out to get you, and it's all for the money. So what?
That one cousin.
Everyone has that cousin, and so Ora's uncle is a pediatrician, and his wife said to this cousin, like, "What are you talking about? Like, we make like $1 per vaccine that we give to a kid or something like that. Like, it's nothing. We like vaccines are not where the big money is in medicine. We're not like, we are not, this is not a huge conspiracy by doctors to give people vaccines. We make nothing on these vaccines, right? Like, this is not, whatever you think of big pharma, right? It's not just big pharma who's telling you this. It's every pediatrician who will tell you, and they're not making so much money on this. What are you talking? So I'm totally with majority of my family and that side of the family. So I gave you a tshuva of someone who, but right, I think the more interesting question, and that's what we'll deal with in the next 35 minutes, what Rav Asher is dealing with, which is not, are vaccines good? And not are they, is it a chiyuv to get it? But if you happen to have a student who doesn't want to get it because they don't believe in it, then what do you do? That already is, for me, a more interesting halachic question where, you know, it gets complicated. Because once, normally, I'm not into coercion. And in medical, right, I am not as convinced that it's a yes or that you can coerce things. But what happens when vaccines are in play and you're starting to talk about threatening the reality of herd immunity, right? Suddenly I do care, right? And, you know, and I want my kids to be safe. And I want other people to vaccinate their kids. So what I do when someone else doesn't share my assumption of the medical system, but I wanted to show you this as opposed to the Tzitzel Yezer. Because the Tzitzel Yezer, there was like an instinctive reaction here of like, that goes too far. Like, even if I think you should be healthy, and I think you should get an eye exam, right? There are so many assumptions to get to from there to I can force other people to get eye exams that everyone sort of sees the 10 gaps that you could have argued. But once we get to vaccines, we change the equation, because now you're asking when there's real danger, not just to you, but, you know, it's crazy that herd immunity has stopped in certain places. Like, that's a crazy reality. And there, suddenly, I think most of us have an intuitive feeling, if we are in favor of vaccines, that maybe coercion is okay here, not necessarily because I would coerce an individual, but because, just like by quarantine, it's not an ideal, but I may be in favor of it to protect other people. Vaccines are the same way. So Rav Asher Weiss is truly, I think, is a good example of a posek who finds himself in that space halachically. So let's look at this translation. So he says, is it permissible to refrain from vaccinating children? Many poskim and communal leaders have asked me whether parents are obligated to inoculate their children by means of generally accepted vaccines in order to prevent terrible diseases, because some important rabbanim recently expressed the following opinion. Since there is a concern that vaccination damages health, not only is it permissible not to vaccinate children, but it is even recommended not to vaccinate them. Okay? If you don't know Jewish politics and you want to look it up, this is very public, he's not ashamed of it, but you can look online and you can Google Shmuel Kamenetsky vaccinations, and you can get him and you can get his halachic position on it, and you can get a transcript of like a many hour like phone call, something. It was very unclear, like a group call that his wife ran as a support group for anti-vaxxers within the Frum community. It's wild. Absolutely, like, unbelievable. So he's responding to this. In my humble opinion, this is an error. Rather, parents obviously have an obligation to vaccinate their children, and I have ruled that it is even permissible for parents to organize themselves in order to force educational institutions not to accept unvaccinated pupils. I will explain my thinking and reasoning. So right off the bat, Rav Asher Weiss tells you, he's not talking about hard coercion, right? He's not talking about strapping somebody down and giving them a vaccine where, you know, I think I would balk, right? And say, I don't know if that's... What he's talking about is what we realistically mean by coercing, which is creating a situation in which non-vaccinated children cannot be part of normal institutions to protect our children who we want to be safe. So he says, paragraph one, a basic presumption is that there is an obligation to avoid and prevent danger. We find there are two facets of this mitzvah, passive avoidance and active prevention of danger. In his discussion of the mitzvah of ma'akeh, of building a guardrail on the roof, the Rambam brings two sources. He writes, be it a roof or anything else that presents a hazard that people are liable to stumble upon and die, for example, if one had a well or cistern in his yard, whether or not it contains water, he is obligated to make an enclosure that is 10 tefachim, 10 handbreadths tall, or to make a cover for it so that a person does not fall in and die. Likewise, there is a positive mitzvah to remove, to safeguard against, and to be exceedingly cautious about any obstruction that endangers life. As it says, take utmost care and scrupulously guard your lives. If he did not remove them, but rather left dangerous obstructions, he has negated a positive mitzvah and transgressed. Do not bring blood upon your house. So, methodologically, what is Rav Asher's first move, and why is it important? We haven't even seen what he said, but what is his first move? Prevention of? Danger to? Other people. Right, his first move is to make it very clear that this is not a Sicilia-like tshuva, right? He's not getting into the question of whether you're obligated to vaccinate yourself for your own health. Right, for him, that's not the interesting question here. Right, the interesting question for him is not coercion of self. It's obligation, your obligation as a member of society to not do things that endanger others. And that's the plane, I think, most of us understand the vaccine conversation has to happen on. So he says, thus, regarding any danger, there's a positive mitzvah to remove, safeguard against, and be exceedingly cautious about it. We learn from Ma'akeh that one must take concrete action to remove danger, and we are further commanded to prevent danger. As it says, take utmost care. In Minchas Asher and Dvarim Siman 7, I wrote at length about the particulars of the mitzvah, whether it's Daraisa Darabanan. Here is not the place to expand upon this. It would therefore seem perfectly obvious that there's a mitzvah to vaccinate children in order to prevent them from contracting terrible diseases. He said, therefore, he makes an interesting move, and he says, therefore,
you should make people
Right. So he says, first of all, before we get to other people, vaccines are always a question of the extent to which I have to protect others, because you're usually talking about vaccinating your children, not yourself. Right? That's usually the age we're talking about. So he says, the first thing I know is that you have a responsibility to maintain the safety in society. The first obligation that devolves on you, therefore, is to take care of your children. However, some cast aspersions and claim that since vaccination sometimes causes children to become sick, it is improper to endanger the children in the immediate term in the attempt to prevent future disease and danger. However, right, so he says, okay, point one is I think you should vaccinate your own children. Point two, what if people think that you shouldn't? He says, in my humble opinion, this claim is completely and totally devoid of substance. And here's where he makes his move, and he says, I get it. Maybe a post-ex job is not to weigh in on reality. But this, you've got to take it on a case-by-case one. This, there is not really a medical question about. He says, because all studies that were done responsibly established beyond the shadow of a doubt that with the exception of mild side effects, it is not at all common for vaccines to have severe ramifications. And there are no known cases where death was caused by vaccination for certain, even though hundreds of millions of children have been routinely vaccinated. On the other hand, as the number of people who do not vaccinate increases, danger increases as well. If many people refuse vaccination, there is a risk that epidemics will break out and cause mass fatalities, as happened before these vaccines were developed. So he says, question one is about other people. Level one, your children. But level two is other people's children. And he says, well, remember, vaccines are fundamentally about public safety. Right, public health. And he says, if we're getting to the point of right where people don't vaccinate, you're not talking anymore about coercion of individuals. You're talking about risking herd immunity. He says the three primary diseases against which the triple vaccination is administered, measles, mumps, and rubella, are terrible diseases. In particular, measles is a horrible disease that entails substantial risk and is more contagious and transmittable from person to person than any other disease known to the medical field. There have already been measles outbreaks in several centers of Yahadus Charedis. I assume that was on purpose, that transliteration. It is known that one baby has died and others have gone very sick from this disease. I've written at length in several places about the disagreement between post-com as to whether a person may place himself in limited remote danger in order to save someone else from major proximate danger. I concluded that the risk in question is exceedingly remote and very uncommon. There's an obligation to save the other person. Moreover, all would agree that doing so is at the very least an act of pious virtue. It means chasidus. Certainly one is obligated to undergo a procedure that entails some risk in order to treat a disease that is liable to place him in great danger. The disagreement was only about parameters of the principle that one places his own life ahead of another's life, but it's obvious that all would agree that when it comes to his own life, he's obligated to place himself in remote danger in order to save himself from proximate danger. Likewise, in the present case, a person is obligated to vaccinate his children because vaccination is not dangerous at all, except in extraordinarily rare cases where lack of vaccination endangers those very children. This is all the more certain given that lack of vaccination constitutes public endangerment. Right, so he goes back and forth. He said, first of all, you have an obligation. Because this is a minor danger to prevent a much bigger danger. Second, and again, the real question here is about others. He says, in truth, the question was already placed on the tables of kings, meaning it was addressed by leading Rabbanim more than 200 years ago, in 1784 to 85. At that time, the English physician Edward Jenner developed the smallpox vaccine. And C. Tiferes Yisrael, who writes that the righteous Jenner, the Hasid Jenner, who developed this vaccine, is certainly one of the righteous among the nations, the Hasidei Umot HaOlam, and will be rewarded in the next world for having saved tens of thousands of lives. Indeed, this disease claimed many victims before this doctor developed the vaccine, as we find in the Shelah HaKadosh, who wrote, after expanding on the degree to which a person must keep away from danger, and I am astonished with regard to the plague of smallpox called Blattern, I don't know, in German, which spreads among the children. May this never befall us. Why aren't people careful to get the children away and take them out of the city? These fathers will certainly be held accountable for the deaths of nursing babies who committed no sin, and children just weaned from milk who committed no transgression, who died from this sickness, and whose fathers did not spirit them away. Magen Avraham cites these words, as does Mishnah Berurah. He says, we have precedent. Right? The Shalat said there were people in his time who didn't want to take their kids out of the cities where there was smallpox, and Shalat, Magen Avraham, Mishnah Berurah said, what are you doing? Right? You're responsible for your kids' death. And then he said, several Achronim wrote that after the development of this vaccine, it's no longer necessary to take the children away from the city. Rather, they should be vaccinated. Right? So the Poskim then got up when there was vaccines and said, you used to be obligated to get your kids away from smallpox. Now you're obligated to vaccinate them. Right? That's what you have to do. That's what it says in Zivchei Tzedek, who attested the fact they administer vaccines on a daily basis and no one has ever been harmed. And so it says, V'kav HaChaim, M'chaim Balaji. This vaccine, developed by the aforementioned doctor, brought about the elimination of the germ that caused this disease to the extent that it is gone from the world. Mostly. This is not the case with respect to the measles and the associated diseases mentioned above, which still exist. If people stop vaccinating, there's a real risk of outbreak of these diseases. In 5745, one of the leading rabbanim of London, Rav Avram Hamburg, also known as Rav Avram Nanzig, published a book called Alei Trufa, in which he discusses the question, which was controversial at the time, of whether it is proper to vaccinate, even though in his day there were children who died as a result of the vaccination, or whether it is preferable to do nothing. Right, so he goes back and he says, look, here I have a proof. Rav Avram Hamburg was living in a time when the vaccines weren't fully safe yet, and he was asked whether you're obligated to take vaccine. And the Tiferet Zerol also addressed this question in Yoma. And the Tiferet Yisrael had concluded that since the danger of not vaccinating is much greater than the danger posed by vaccinating, it is permissible and proper to vaccinate. In his introduction to the Sefer Alei Trufa, the author describes how his little son and daughter were cut down while still flowering, they died of this disease, and how when he lived in the holy community of The Hague in Holland, there was a major outbreak and many children died, and how when he was in London once again, many contracted the disease. In the main part of the text, he wrote that even if 1 in 1,000 dies from the vaccination, that's not a reason to refrain from vaccinating, just as bloodletting and laxatives are routine. And even though we've seen several people who faint during bloodletting, and there are reports that in very rare cases someone has died from bloodletting, one should nevertheless not refrain from these things, which improve wellness and health. The same applies in the present case. Rav Hamburg quotes several contemporary Rabbanim who permitted this treatment, even though in their time it seems that there were indeed those who became sick and even died from this treatment. So he says, it used to be that Poskim said that even if you put your life in a minuscule danger from a vaccine, you still have to take it for your sake and for the sake of others. And he said, if there were...
Why would that be okay to put yourself...
Because he says, 1 in 1,000 is not considered a risk, halachically, and when the counter risk is higher, right, significantly higher, so you're obligated to risk the 1 in 1,000 chance instead of the 1 in 10 chance, right, 1 in 20 chance. So he says, if there were poskim who were so convinced that for the sake of your safety and the safety of others, you were obligated to take vaccines even when there was a admittedly remote chance that you might actually be harmed from the vaccine, but it did exist. So he says, in any event, it's a clear and obvious that nowadays it's not only permissible to vaccinate, but there's even obligation in order to prevent danger to the individual and the public. Even in their time, hundreds of years ago, they vaccinated. If they vacillated, it was only because they were indeed children who died from the vaccine, and it's evident from their words. It's not true of today's vaccines, so there's a bona fide obligation to vaccinate. Right? So he says, look, there were poskim who were willing to say you were obligated even when there was a minor risk. Now there is no minor risk, so for sure you're obligated. Section 2. He says, I saw that Shlomo Zalman Orbach and his Mincha Shlomo has a major chiddush about taking experimental drugs. Just as we do not worry about risking lives to wage a Mechemes Mitzvah, a war that is a mitzvah to wage, so too marauding beasts, bears and wolves are akin to a Mechemes Mitzvah, and we do not worry about risking lives to fight them. The same applies during plagues and epidemics, which have the same status in Mechemes Mitzvah. Consequently, he permits taking experimental drugs. That's an interesting argument. But in my opinion, the rationale is very far-fetched. aside from the fact that it's obvious to me that the law of waging war applies only to actual wars between nations and armies, not to running beasts, and certainly not to sickness and disease. In truth, there's no need or purpose for this rationale, because in the modern world, they neither expect nor allow people to volunteer to take drugs that endanger healthy people. Neither do they administer experimental drugs except to people who cannot be cured and whose lives cannot be saved by any known means, or unless there's no reason to suspect that these drugs would be harmful to health. In any event, this is a very innovative rationale, and that there are good reasons to doubt. Therefore, there's no obligation, no mitzvah, no permission to endanger oneself in order to advance medical research on experimental drugs. However, this is irrelevant to the case at hand, because the effectiveness of these vaccines has been proven beyond all doubt millions of times, and the danger they entail is minuscule. He said, look, I'm not saying you have to be involved in trying to save your life with doubtful measures. I'm saying you have to vaccinate, right? He said, this is not the question. He said, but in parentheses, so why does he bother quoting Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach? Right? If this is not the case, why does he bother quoting Rosh Hashanah Zalman Auerbach, who he doesn't agree with, and it's not really relevant to the Shaila?
Some people might make the connection.
Yeah, exactly. Is that I think he's doing it because he knows there are people in the world who think the jury is out on vaccines. So what's he doing? He's saying, look, I don't agree with Rosh Hashanah Zalman, but he wants it in the tshuva, which is Rosh Hashanah Zalman thinks even experimental drugs are obligatory, because that points in a certain direction. Right? It creates a given that you should always be trying to protect yourself medically. Rosh Hashanah Zalman takes it as far as even experimentally, saying, look, I really don't agree with that. But that's not what we're talking about, right? He's like setting up a straw man. He's saying, look, there are experimental drugs in the world, and there Rosh Hashanah Zalman thinks you need to engage in those to save your life. I don't agree with that, because there's danger involved, etc. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about vaccines. So section 3. It's indeed true that since the vast majority of children and adults in modern society have been vaccinated, these diseases have become exceedingly rare. So now he moves to the next argument, which is maybe you'll tell me that no individual can be obligated to vaccinate, because once there is herd immunity, so then it's not about public health anymore. It's back to a question of your own health, right? Once there is herd immunity. Therefore, it would seem that there are grounds for parents to claim that they should not endanger their children through vaccination, causing them pain and side effects, when the expected risk of non-vaccination is so minuscule, right? He said, maybe we've been so successful in creating herd immunity that now we've gone back to the case where a person can say, look, if you don't believe in coercing for my own health, so you can't coerce me to take a vaccine, because I'm not actually endangering anybody. It's just about me. And if you're not, the Tzitzit Eliezer doesn't even need to ask this question. The Tzitzit Eliezer thinks you can force someone to take an eye exam. But if you're not going that far, which Rav Asher isn't, so he says, so why can't someone say, look, I believe in vaccines, but there is herd immunity, so why should I be the one who takes the vaccine and gets the potential side effects of it? So to this, Rav Asher Weiss says, no. Why? Because again, you can't make that argument. You have to vaccinate. Why? Because he said, this is not a question of your personal health. This is a question of public health. And public health is different. And he says, however, if we allow these parents not to vaccinate their children, the results would be entirely predictable. Many would refrain from vaccinating their children, motivated by maternal compassion, paternal love. And then the great danger of outbreaks of diseases would emerge once again. Therefore, refraining from vaccination is not permitted in any way. In truth, I have ruled year in and year out that there's an obligation to vaccinate children for this very reason. Yet the reality is that more and more parents refrain from vaccinating their children, and we are now witnessing a broad outbreak of the measles. However, it seems that even if we would say that an individual can evade vaccination and still claim that he's kept his child safe, right? Again, he's saying, even if I don't buy Tzitzit Eliezer type arguments, I don't think that you can force someone to maintain their own health. Even if I don't buy that, again, according to Tzitzit Eliezer, this is not a question. But according to him, even if I don't buy that, he would say it would nevertheless stand to reason that there's an obligation to vaccinate children for two reasons. A, I explained elsewhere that any idea or action that would cause damage and injustice if done en masse even if it would cause no harm, injustice, or evil when done by an individual, may nevertheless not be done by an individual. It's not just or right for an individual to do what the masses may not do. His first argument, which, as he said, he makes in many places, is a fascinating halakhic argument, and now he's applying it to public health. And that's the following. I can't say that I'm allowed to avoid doing something because it won't have real consequences. This is essentially a halakhic version of which philosophical argument? What? The categorical imperative by Kant. Right? Kant says, how do I determine whether something is moral? I imagine what would happen if the entire world engaged in that activity, and if the world would be moral if everyone did it, then I'm obligated as an individual to do it. And if it would be immoral if everyone did it, then I can't do it. Now, Kant takes it to an extreme, right? Kant says, lying is immoral because you can't have a society in which everyone lies, and therefore I'm not even allowed to lie to save my child's life. Now, that's Kant's argument. Right? Now, you can always respond and say, the world would be a perfectly fine place if everyone lied in order to save lives and only to save lives. Right? So you can always, play with the argument a little bit and not get to Kant's particularly extreme conclusion. But Rav Asher Weiss says, halacha believes the same thing. In the middle, I'll say what he says outside. He doesn't explain it here, so I'll say how, as I've heard it from him in the past. He makes the following argument. The Gemara says that the sin of the people of Sodom, and in the Midrash is the people of the Mabul, or the Yerushalmi is the people of the Mabul, what they would do is the following. They would never steal more than a Shava Pruta, because a Shava Pruta is the minimum amount that is prosecutable in court. They would all steal 10 cents. Because this way, no one could be prosecuted, but everyone would still set 10 cents, and therefore reduce somebody to poverty. And that, the Gemara says, is the reason that Sodom was destroyed, and the world was destroyed in the Mabul. So Rav Asher says, what's the argument behind it? The argument is as follows. Any act which, by virtue of the fact that if everyone engaged in it, it would destroy the world, someone's, monetary standing, that's enough to tell me that I can't perform that act, even if my act is not a quantifiable crime. Right? The fact that it, if repeated by everybody, would lead to a disastrous result, that makes it immoral and anti-halachic. Now, in a different tshuva, he uses this to explain. What concept do you think you could use this principle to explain? Not in health. Staying in the monetary realm. So Russia uses it to explain why halakha must recognize intellectual property. Right? Because he says the following. He says, look, if I download something illegally, it barely affects anybody. But if everybody would resort to downloading books illegally rather than buying them, then they would go out of business. And therefore, he says that violating intellectual property is essentially what Sodom did. Right? Everyone says, I downloaded the movie. I downloaded the song illegally. Who cares? Who did that hurt? They have millions of other people who are downloading it legally and paying them. Who cares if I downloaded it legally? And the answer is, you have to care. Because the act you're engaging in, everyone did it, would destroy the underpinning of intellectual property, and therefore you are participating in that crime, even if it's not a significant act in and of itself. Right? You have to go through that sort of categorical, imperative, Kantian thought process and say, but what would happen if the whole world did it? And if the answer is, it would be untenable, right? No one would want to invent anything, no one would want to write anything, well then, clearly what you're doing is participating in that immoral act. Go to the second to last paragraph on this page. He says, the same law and the same reasoning apply in the present case. It is only because most people vaccinate their children, thereby causing them pain, that the minority can refrain from vaccination. He said, right, the only way that you could say, look, I don't want my kid to get that quasi-flu-like thing you get after the flu vaccine, or You know, like sometimes you get chickenpox vaccines, so your kid, they'll tell you, in 48 hours, your kid may have a mild grade fever. This happens, right? Some of my kids, after they had their vaccines. So, like, you know, that night, they don't sleep well that night. You have to give them, you know, children's Tylenol, and they scream through the night, and you have a bad night, and whatever, right? But if everybody said, look, I don't want to have a bad night tonight. I don't want to hear my kids scream. I don't want to, you know, no parent like taking their kids to the vaccine, right? Your kids scream, what are you doing? I don't want a shot, or you have to hold them down, right? It's like this, Monaim. It's just not. But if every parent said, well, everyone else is doing it, let them create the herd immunity, so everyone who is particularly squeamish would say, well, you know, I'm not doing it for my kids. But he said, you can't do that. So the more people refrain from vaccinating their children, the greater the danger, to the extent that if most people would act in this manner, things would revert to what they were. We would return to the medieval era, and hundreds of thousands would die from terrible diseases. In cases like this, the obligation to vaccinate applies to each and every individual. I know that there's room to engage in mental acrobatics and distinguish between the act of commission, which would be forbidden, like those who stole less than a value of a shavar pruta, and an act of omission, a shevi al tasa, like refraining from vaccination. Moreover, one can claim that maybe there's only smacks of a prohibition when many people come at once and steal everything their fellow has, like the generation of the Mabul and the people of Stone. However, in my opinion, it makes more sense. There are no grounds to make such a distinction. For their essence, the cases are similar, as is clear to anyone with understanding and intelligence. Indeed, the facts have been proven. Reality. That many people have been refusing vaccination recently, and now many children have caught the measles, is slapping us in the face. Argument 2. It seems this halakha can be derived from the obligation of all residents of a city to take part in guarding the city and repairing the walls. As explained in Bava Basra Chet and Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat, Kuv Samach Gimel. Just as all residents of the city must either share in the actual guarding or the expenses of guarding the city, and even though it's clear that if one person shirks his duty to guard or pay, the walls will not crumble and the enemy will not prevail, the obligation to guard the city nevertheless applies to each person equally, and no individual may dodge it. So too in the present case. For everyone is a partner when it comes to anything that is for the betterment of society or a public necessity. Each person must contribute his equal share, and there is no difference between a financial obligation and the obligation to vaccinate. The same law applies to both. This all applies in the case where one can refrain from vaccinating his children without risking their health, because enough others do vaccinate. The present situation is far more severe, though, and we need not resort to creative readings of Agadot to determine that vaccination of children is obligatory. The disease has broken out already, and every parent refuses to vaccinate. His children is placing them directly in harm's way. Right, so I think when you compare this to Ezra's Tshuva, right, you get a very interesting, right, contrast. Right? They're not talking the same issue. The Tzitzit Eliezer, when asked about coercing medical treatment, is following it from the logical conclusion of all those poskim who think you don't really have rights over your body. There's a mitzvah to maintain health. You're allowed to be kofen ala mitzvot. It's not just about life-saving things and all those. And therefore, he just says, coercion is about all things at all times for your obligation. Rav Asher Weiss is a posek who, as you can tell, just reading the tshuva, is much less convinced of that. Right? He's like, look, you don't want to do it for yourself. I hear that. Right? Maybe I can't coerce you. But vaccines isn't about that. Vaccines is about public health. There's a few arguments that he needs to make, which he does. One is, poskim have the right and responsibility to read the facts on the ground as they see them. And if the medical community says the vaccines are critical, then a posek has the right and responsibility to integrate that reality into their psak. And every individual has the responsibility to take that reality into account. That's his first point. Point two is that this obligation to maintain the health of the public starts with your own children. Right? That's move two he makes. Move three is that you have a responsibility to society for two reasons. Not for two reasons. You have a responsibility to society. And, he says, and even in a case when you think you're not contributing to the problem by not participating, he says you're wrong. Because it's morally wrong and halachically wrong to do an act where you're taking advantage of the fact that everyone else is doing what they're supposed to be doing. Right? The notion of public responsibility is that everyone needs to be involved. And he has two proofs, both from the monetary realm. Right? One, the obligation to protect the city, where again, if one guard shirks his responsibility, probably no one will break in that time. Doesn't matter. And his example from the theft, where if you steal less than a shavar pruta, that probably won't destroy somebody. There's no quantifiable act of theft, but you're not allowed to do it, even if no one else is doing it. And he says, yes, you could argue that it's not the same, because in the case of Sodom, everyone was planning to destroy someone financially this way, and here people are just, you know, refraining from vaccinating. But he said, look, first of all, I don't buy it. It's still immoral. And he says, B, we have gotten to that point where enough people aren't vaccinating that it has in fact become a danger. You have broken herd immunity because enough people are selfish. So don't tell me that it's just you and you rely on other people's herd immunity. We've gone to the point where enough people have taken advantage of that type of argumentation. So coming back to what we were talking about last week with epidemics, right? The Tzitz Eliezer is someone who, for him, right, he doesn't, maybe he'll also think that there is these obligations in terms of public health. But for him, your conversation is primarily about your own treatment. But Rav Asher Weiss is a good example of a posek who says, look, I'm maybe not convinced as much about the ability to coerce people for their own treatment, but I have a very robust understanding of why medical, by communal health, public health, is different and which it is legitimate for me to obligate and force people to engage in treatment. And if you remember, he doesn't summarize at the end, but what is he willing to therefore put his name behind because of this conviction? If you remember, go back to the beginning. Turning kids away from school. Right? He's not just saying there's an obligation. He said, if that's the case, the corollary is that there can be consequences. Right? Coercive consequences, which again, they're not meant to coerce as much as they are meant to protect people. But once you recognize that there's a halachic category that makes public health different than personal health, it makes sense that not only can I demand that people vaccinate, but I can deny them entrance to Jewish schools in order to do that. Because public health allows for coercion and allows for protection of other kids. So this is where it's some of the same arguments you saw by quarantining, right? By quarantining, of course you don't want to quarantine someone. We don't like taking away people's freedom for a week or two. It's not nice, right? It's like prison. I get it. But we assume that it's okay because of pikuach nefesh, because you're protecting other people. So Rav Asher Weiss is basically along that line for saying, look, I may not want to coerce you. I may hesitate. But don't give me the argument, I have the right to do whatever I want, I'm not harming anybody, you can't deny my kids a Jewish education. He said, that's not true, I totally can. Right? Public health is a different category, it requires a different type of sensitivity, proven by the fact that enough individuals at this point are not vaccinating, that it is a public health crisis, and therefore you are obligated. And therefore, these type of arguments, I think, are going to help us with what we talked about last week, where one of the arguments in favor of quarantining is going to be these types of arguments, that public health allow us to take broader trends into account and do things that under normal circumstances we wouldn't do, right? Reject kids from school who should otherwise be in school. Yes, that's something we don't want to do. No, it's not the children's fault because they don't make the decision their parents do. But public health is one of those things that we're allowed to take extreme measures in order to protect it. And I think those same types of arguments are clearly going to be invocable in the quarantine thing. Right? If we're not talking about preventing a disease, but preventing the spread of a disease that already exists, right? You're definitely going to make similar arguments to the ones that Rav Asher makes here. Okay, so like I said, just as a disclaimer again, this is not an exhaustive treatment, right? I chose not to do an exhaustive treatment and a survey, but instead to give you two post-skim who deal with these cases and see what it looks like when you put these arguments together to really make an argument in favor of a particular vision of how halacha engages with public health. So I gave you the Tzitzit Ezra and Rosh Weiss. Obviously, there are other arguments you can make. You could critique things here and there. But at least a perspective came out from this, and it was, you know, I think a particularly clear one at that. So let's stop there with this.